Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host, and today our guest is Emily Waddell, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. Today we're talking about COVID-19 and return to work. Specifically, in most of our careers, we haven't had a time in which a large group of employees suddenly moved to a remote work environment. As most of you are aware, when that occurred, many of us were struggling with how to make it work, setting expectations, making sure individuals had the equipment and tools they needed to work from home, and generally just making sure that individuals continued to feel engaged with the organization. Months later, as employers are requiring employees to return to work in some fashion, whether 5 days a week or a hybrid work situation, there are a multitude of things that employers need to keep at top of mind. And thankfully, we have Emily here to give us a sense as to how individuals can do this and still comply with legal requirements. So Emily, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Tani. Thank you for having me.
Well, I am excited by this topic. I'm excited by the thought that we are at a time and a place within the pandemic in which we're returning people to the office and that we got here, because I think there were times along this bumpy journey where we questioned whether or not we'd all be working from home for the indefinite future. So I think it's exciting that we're having this conversation. So one of the things I think that's at top of mind for individuals is how we safely bring people back to work while simultaneously balancing the needs from an operational standpoint, the needs from an emotional standpoint for our employees, and then generally making sure that we're in compliance. So I think a lot of people are probably thinking or want to know, Emily, how could you help us do this? So can you provide our listeners with a little bit of information about you and your practice and why I'm talking to you about this topic?
Sure. So I'm a employment and labor attorney at Verrill. And in that role, basically what our team does is provide guidance and support to employers in all aspects of the employment relationship. So as you can imagine, over the last year, you know, there are a lot of things that companies and organizations are experiencing for the first time that no one's really ever had to deal with before. So our role really is to provide guidance and provide assistance in navigating these ever-changing times. And then I guess personally, you know, a little bit about me. So before joining Verrill and being a lawyer, I worked in human resources and labor relations as well. So having that experience in the employment world.
I think that's one of the greatest parts. Well, I mean, there's a lot of great things about you, Emily, but one of the things that you bring to the Verrill team is that you have that real world experience, and it's recent. Recently, you've been working in-house with a large organization, helping them to manage their labor and employment needs. So that real world experience helps us to provide guidance to employers about best practices as we move forward. So Emily, let's jump right into it. In your experience right now, what are some of the biggest issues that you're finding that employers and companies are grappling with as they return employees and team members to work? And this is all with the understanding that a lot of industries, manufacturing and food and beverage, have been working throughout all of this, but they might have had segments of their workforce working from home and now are talking about bringing them back. So what are you seeing as some of those big ticket issues that people are really grappling with?
Yeah, so that's a really great point, Tawny. You know, I think it's important in this conversation not to lose sight of the fact that every industry and every business has kind of been operating differently over the last year. So on the one hand, you know, you have businesses that have been operational. And on the other hand, you have, you know, perhaps organizations that have been completely remotely. So their approaches and the questions that they're asking might look a little bit different based on their experiences. So I think right now organizations are at a turning point where if they have had an element of remote work, they need to kind of figure out if they want to keep that going for their business strategy moving forward. Some organizations, you know, weren't really impacted by having to have a remote entirely remote workforce or have the capability for remote work. And other organizations, it was incredibly disruptive. So really what we're kind of seeing is this turning point for businesses where they have to decide what the next decision is for their future as an organization. And part of that is for organizations that have had a component of remote work is who can continue to work remotely in this new world and who can't, who needs to come back. So we're seeing a lot of conversation around that particular issue. And I think really what it comes down to in any organization, regardless of if it's your whole workforce or a portion of your workforce that's been out, is coming up with a plan and being consistent across different types of work. And that's important, you know, not only for the business continuity, but also from an employee experience perspective, right? Explaining to employees what your return to the office strategy is and making sure that it makes sense to them.
I think that's a really great point, Emily, because while operationally your needs may be that someone could continue to perform all the job duties and responsibilities remotely, how does it affect your culture? How is it viewed by other members of your team who can't perform their job duties remotely, whether it's because the tools and equipment are such that they can't go to a remote or be done within someone's home environment, or because of a team nature of the position where they're going to need to have in-person interactions with other individuals throughout the course of the day. So I think that that's a really good point. When you're communicating with employers about how they return people to work, are there some legal aspects to it that people need to be considering that are outside of those cultural discussions?
Certainly, yeah. So I think what's important for employers to remember is that, you know, even though we're living through these crazy times, unprecedented situations and, you know, decisions that need to be made by businesses, is that all of the legal frameworks that applied before the pandemic still apply now. So, you know, employers are most likely familiar with the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. So if you have an employee who, you know, comes forward and says, hey, you know, I understand I need to go back to work, but I actually have this condition and, you know, I don't know if now's the right time for me. I mean, that's a time where you have to engage in that that dialogue, right? And make sure that you're not making a decision without having that conversation and seeing if a reasonable accommodation needs to be made. Now, you know, if the employee's concern, say, is more related to perhaps their age or something like that, you know, that wouldn't trigger the same legal obligation that an employer would have under the Americans with Disabilities Act, because under ADEA, that wouldn't, it just wouldn't create the same obligation. So I think it's incredibly important when faced with those situations in a return to work context to understand, you know, what are the employee's concerns, and then systematically go through, what does that mean for my business? What is my obligation here? And what are my options?
For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Emily Waddell, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're talking about COVID-19 and the return to work. So Emily, what I'm hearing is that while we need to look at different positions and determine whether or not there's the need to return to work or the job can continue to occur remotely, we simultaneously are going to have an individualized discussion with people based off of potential legal implications under the Americans with Disabilities Act or any state Fair Employment Practices Act that could protect individuals from any form of disability discrimination. For those individuals who may need to continue to work remotely, if the organization previously had not created or didn't have in place a remote work policy, is that something that they need to consider doing moving forward? Or hey, they haven't had one up to this point, so it's not problematic to continue in that fashion.
Yeah, so probably a very lawyerly response, Tawny, but I would say if you don't have a remote work policy, it is definitely worth creating one. I think even if you and your organization has kind of been able to over the last year and a half or what have you, whatever month we're on now of COVID, if this is going to be a longer term solution for your business, it's better to have clear guidelines for how it's going to work in the future. So some things that I would recommend employers consider is first, create that remote work policy. And I would make sure that you include a couple of different provisions in it. So the first one would be confidentiality. If employees are working at home, perhaps they have access to sensitive material about your organization. And that might look, different depending on what type of industry you're working in. But I'd make sure it's clear that employees have an obligation to secure company sensitive documents, technology, access to your equipment, computers, et cetera. I'd also address some potential workers' compensation concerns in that policy. So it can be pretty unclear what's covered under workers' compensation for a remote employee. So employers can either identify in that policy or in a work from home agreement, if you have a personalized one with each employee, where the work will be performed, the work hours of that employee, and the activities that are permitted or prohibited during work hours. And then another element of that sometimes isn't thought of is making sure that it's clear that workers' compensation doesn't apply to the injuries of third parties. So for an example, an employee's family or children or something like that. And then finally, there is a wage and hour component to remote work. So I would just make sure that there's an increased emphasis on timekeeping for employees who are non-exempt so that all hours are being appropriately tracked and accounted for and ultimately paid.
I think those are all really good points, especially for individual organizations that haven't been operating with a policy during the course of the pandemic. And as you talk about confidentiality and workers' compensation, in my mind, even if someone did have a policy that they put in place as a result of the pandemic and that movement to work from home, as the world opens back up, I think things change as well. There was that expectation that as people were working remotely during the course of the pandemic, we're all working from home or a home environment that was limited likely to just the immediate members of our family or our pod. But as we open up, will individuals be working remotely from a coffee house, from a restaurant, from these more public areas? And that creates, I think, more concerns as to confidentiality, as to workers' comp, as to wage and hour. Are we paying employees who in the middle of the day decide they want to move from working at home to be working at a coffee house, and while driving from home to the coffee house, they're in a car accident, or while walking into the coffee house, they slip and fall? Is that covered under workers' comp and some of those larger questions? And
if they're working in that environment, can people see their screen? Can they overhear the conversation? And is confidential information just leaking out of your organization because you haven't set expectations with your employees? So all of those concerns, Emily, I think it's really important, and you've done a great job of identifying, even if you don't have it, and it sounds super lawyerly to say you have to have a policy. If you don't have a policy, fine, but setting the expectations as to these things, I think it is really important. Emily, if they don't have a policy, do you have thoughts on how you can communicate in a non-lawyerly fashion to your employees some of these expectations? Is it just in a letter or is it verbally? Would that work, at least for setting expectations?
Yeah, you know, I think personally, if I didn't have a policy, I'd want to have it in writing some way just to kind of memorialize the fact that you explain that to your employees. But having said that, I mean, I think it could take the form of, you know, say like a toolbox talk or some type of a, you know, morning kickoff meeting, if you will, with your employees, all employee meeting, whatever you want to call it. And then maybe everyone gets a flyer or something that, you know, kind of summarizes what the rules are and what your expectations are. I think that could be a way to facilitate this type of expectation setting without having a formalized policy.
Thanks, Emily, for that. I think that's really helpful. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about genetically modified ingredients?
Don't like them.
Artificial flavors and colors?
No thanks.
Clean ingredients.
Now that I like.
When you care about what's in things and what's not, shouldn't your vitamins be clean too? Sundown Vitamins are all clean all the time. Non-GMO, free of gluten and dairy, with colors and flavors from real food. We even have USDA certified Sundown Organics and kids vitamins too. When you're living clean, choose clean with Sundown Vitamins at supermarkets, drugstores, or on Amazon.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez. And today our guest is Emily Waddell, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. Today, we're talking about COVID-19 and the return to work. Depending on the industry that you operate in, some of your employees have likely been working remotely during the course of the past years, months. It's been a while. So as we are talking about returning employees to work, there are a number of things that we want everyone to consider. And I think Emily did a great job before the break of helping walk us through that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, that we're going to have to look at different positions to understand how the positions interact with the Americans with Disabilities Act and other fair employment practices legislation at a state level, and then also potential policies regarding maintaining some form of work from home, even if it could be in a hybrid situation. You know, Emily, I think something that a lot of people are considering and continue to keep at top of mind is the element of COVID-19. We're not out of the woods yet. And while we have a vast majority of the country vaccinated in some format, there's still anxiety and concerns regarding safety. And I think that's understandable. And depending on the industry you're in, it could be at a different level. Can you talk to me a little bit about, are we returning to people to work and it's just like the last 18 months didn't occur, or should there be changes in how we're doing business considering COVID-19 moving forward?
Sure. So, you know, I think in light of everything that's happened over the last year and a half, it's going to make sense that work is going to look differently than it did before. So, you know, I think depending on the industry that you're in, depending on the size of your organization, there are different precautions that you should consider implementing in your work environment, right? So all of the stuff that we've all grown to become familiar with, are you going to require masks, social distancing, vaccination? Those are all decisions that businesses need to make, what their stance is on it for employees, for customers, for visitors in the workplace. And, you know, I think that can take many different forms. When I say social distancing, you know, is it in a restaurant, you know, creating distance between tables? Is it, you know, in an office building marking 6 feet distance in hallways or common areas, cafeteria or break room settings, limiting the number of seats, or perhaps even staggering break times or lunch periods to limit potential exposure? These are all options for businesses to consider.
I think you make a ton of great points there, but one thing that some organizations I feel are consistently failing to consider is how their employee policies are also going to interact with their larger operational policies regarding clients, customers, visitors, so that if you are an organization or an entity in which third parties are going to consistently have access to your workforce, how you treat your employees and how you treat those third parties or the public, they interact with each other really closely. So if you're deciding, hey, we're going to have a mandatory vaccination policy, how are you treating your customers? And are you really achieving the safety goals that you're setting out to achieve by having a policy such as that? And how can you, I don't want to say argue, but what evidence are you showing that it's necessary to maintain safety if you have these large groups of people who are coming into your organization who potentially are unvaccinated? I know that we're not like specifically talking about vaccination status right now, and I'd like to get into that at some point, but let's talk a little bit more about, I mean, should we be bringing everyone back to work at the same time, 100%, or are there some risks with that from a COVID standpoint?
So, you know, I think for businesses that have been able to operate partially or fully remotely, you know, I do think that there's a potential opportunity there to initiate a slower return to normalcy, I guess. And, you know, I suppose it really kind of comes down to you as the employer and your risk tolerance and kind of how you're feeling in the current environment. But I think if there's opportunity to kind of utilize a phased approach, I think that's the way to go for your comfort as an employer, but also for the comfort of your employees potentially as everyone kind of readjusts to a new normal. And I think what kind of is helpful in that type of an approach is just being clear with employees as to what exactly is, you know, happening at each stage and what they can expect at work.
I think you're absolutely right that communication is key to these discussions, and whether or not it's being completely transparent or being partially transparent, but communication throughout the process, I think, is really important for our employees right now. One of the things that I'm wondering about whether or not you're hearing more discussion about is travel. And I'd like to get your thoughts as to limitations on work-related travel or even personal travel, and whether or not you're seeing employers or companies who are talking about or issuing rules or guidance concerning what their expectations are for employees regarding travel.
Sure. Yeah, I think a lot of employers right now are, if not prohibiting, limiting inner office travel if you're an employer that has, you know, offices in different states. I think limiting personal travel is something that I personally haven't seen as much. I think something that's kind of operating here that we haven't really touched on too are the different rules being promulgated by each of the states. So, you know, do I think an employer could say, you know, if you travel out of state, you know, we don't want to see you for, you know, X amount of days aligned to CDC guidelines. You know, I think that you could, but I think it gets a little tricky when different states have different rules. So personally, I think, you know, it does make sense right now to limit travel for work-related purposes, especially if there's perhaps a more intensive travel component, if it's getting on a plane or what have you. And I think a lot of organizations have been able to adjust to utilizing technology to kind of substitute for those experiences.
I think the technology aspect of it really does play a great role in how we continue to be able to connect either with each other within the organization or with third parties. One of the things I find a lot of employers grappling with, understandably so, is I don't want to know if my employees are vaccinated. I think that's their own personal choice. But how do I deal with travel and making sure that our employees are following either state or CDC or Department of State regulations if they are traveling internationally? So when they find out that an employee's traveled internationally, but they want or expect them to return to work after their vacation, if it was for pleasure or after the business trip, but we find that CDC guidance would recommend some form of or mandate some type of quarantine following the travel. So in those situations, finding out the vaccination status appears as though it might be necessary for the employer. And I think keeping that information confidential and understanding what we can and can't ask becomes a really important question for companies.
Certainly. Yeah. No, I think the emphasis on confidentiality is incredibly important. And, you know, I think in this kind of new normal, we will have some people based on their vaccination status will have different requirements under state and federal guidelines. So I think just making sure that that's confidential and it doesn't become kind of a topic of workplace conversation is important.
For those who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Emily Waddell, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. Today we're talking about COVID-19 and the return to work. And what we've been spending a lot of this segment talking about is how COVID has changed the work environment and things that we need to consider and keep at top of mind as we bring employees back to work. Emily, one of the things you and I haven't touched on at all is OSHA. I mean, we have this federal agency and then smaller state agencies that perform similar functions that create regulations and rules. Right now, do we have OSHA regulations that would dictate how employers are bringing employees back to work?
So the recent rule really dealt more with the healthcare industry than it did to any other industry, which I think was a bit of a surprise, honestly, after the last couple of months of kind of hearing that this rule was in development and was going to be released shortly. You know, I think while we don't have guidance from OSHA specific to other industries, I do think that there is potentially an opportunity for businesses, should they choose to adopt, you know, some of those rules if they would like to, and if they feel that would, you know, bring some extra security. But as of right now, OSHA does not have a role for industries besides the healthcare industry.
And I think that's one of the things, Emily, that we're finding a lot of employers or corporations that are grappling with is they've got states or they're operating in states in which mandates have been relaxed and there's limited mandates, whether it's regarding masking or social distancing or any other precautions or protections they should be taking. And we have the media who is presenting information in different formats that is then providing, I think, most of the education that our employees have regarding what is safe and what is not safe right now. We've got the CDC giving us some guidance, but then we have OSHA, and they're saying, hey, you have to maintain a safe and healthy work environment and not providing direct regulations to most industries regarding what that looks like. I mean, we have some guidance on the website concerning how we move forward, but honestly, that isn't providing a ton of helpful information, and it's also very limited in so much as it applies to whether people are vaccinated or non-vaccinated. And for employers who don't want to get into that discussion with employees, I think it becomes much more difficult. OSHA, the CDC, are there other places where you believe employers or companies can go to get a better sense as to what they should or shouldn't be doing?
So I think this is also a good opportunity to perhaps leverage connections you have within your industry as well. You know, I think if you have a counterpart in another organization, now is really the time to kind of pool knowledge and see if there's something specific to your work environment that you can implement that would be helpful. And then, you know, just to emphasize to Tawny what you said about the CDC and other governmental organizations, that really is where employees are getting their information too, right? You know, we all watch the news or read the news or however you get your news, hear about the latest developments. And so I think it's important for employers, as I'm sure, you know, all employers have experienced over the last year, to be up on top of those developments and then implement procedures as needed.
So that's really great advice, Emily. Thanks for that. I think sometimes we forget that we do have peers who can provide us with helpful information about how they're operating. And with that great piece of advice, I think it's a good time for us to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one, and we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
Hi, this is Rhett Rasmussen of besthotgrill.com. Gift giving occurs year-round, whether for birthdays, holidays, or a special expression of thanks to your best clients and customers. Of course, you want to show your love and gratitude, but you also want to give a gift that provides a positive image of you and your organization. Solaire infrared grills from besthotgrill.com are both practical and unforgettable. Made in the USA, Solaire has a grill for most budgets, but more importantly, Solaire delivers the wow that everybody likes to receive in a gift. Impressive out of the box, and even more so in use, the Solaire infrared grills are the gift of value that will build relationships. With every great tasting, juicy meal enjoyed from their Solaire, they'll think of you. Step up your gift giving. Learn more about the amazing Solaire infrared grills at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Emily Waddell, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. Today we've been talking about COVID-19 and return to work. We've spent a lot of time discussing the fact that this is industry specific. Everyone is going to experience a return to work in a different fashion, and understanding that in certain situations, we're going to need to have policies in place. And at some point, depending on different employee circumstances, we may have to make exceptions to those policies or practices. One of the things that I believe are at the top of everyone's mind is vaccination. Emily, so I would love to have a discussion with you and hear your thoughts to vaccinate or not vaccinate and having a mandate regarding that. So can an employer mandate that employees are vaccinated?
So it's definitely a very hot topic right now, and there's a lot to kind of unpack. So can employees require vaccinations for their employees? I think you can, but there are some caveats. So bear with me as I kind of talk through it. The first kind of question I would ask an employer who wants to require a vaccination is, what does that mean? Which may seem like it's kind of a nitpicky question, but what I'd want to understand is the employer going to fire employees who don't get vaccinated? And the reason for that is to understand, you know, how is the policy going to be implemented? Especially as under the law, there are reasons why people can refuse a vaccine. So first, you know, someone may have a medical disability and they can't receive any of the vaccines that are available for whatever medical reason. Someone could also raise a religious exemption. So they could have a closely held religious belief about why they can't receive the COVID-19 shots. And that standard is, you know, fairly not really clear cut. You know, I hate to kind of describe it that way, but it's hard for employers to argue that that's not a closely held religious belief. So those are just two examples of reasons why people might have legal protection in choosing to not receive the vaccine in an employment setting. And then, you know, on top of that, there is a chance that your employees might feel that requiring a vaccine is a little bit big brother-ish, and they might not feel like it's your place as the employer to dictate whether or not they can get a vaccine. You know, from where I sit, where that gets a little concerning is it is kind of a major change in your working conditions now. If you aren't required to get a vaccine for your employer before COVID and now you are, I mean, maybe that's an impetus for people to, you know, engage in some type of a collective action or consider unionizing, just because it is such a hot button topic. But having said all of that, I kind of hit the cons first there, Tani, but the pros are that it helps mitigate your risk, right? I mean, that's what everyone's talking about now with the COVID-19 vaccine, is it helps mitigate your risk. You, you know, feel more confident that your employees are going to stay safe and stay healthy. There's just a lot there.
Let's jump into, short answer is yes, you can mandate the vaccine, right?
Yes.
But if you mandate it, there you're going to have to make exceptions for individuals as a result of potentially a disability or a religious exemption. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Now, is this something that we've never seen before? Is this question or this discussion about mandating vaccines something that we've never dealt with before? Or could entities have mandated flu vaccines or something to that effect prior to COVID-19?
Yeah. So, you know, I think this is new for some industries, but certainly when we're talking about an organization that's operating in a healthcare space, a hospital, perhaps an assisted living facility or some type of industry or some type of organization in that industry, they do have mandates such as the flu vaccine.
As we move out of pandemic environment, right? So as we have a larger group of individuals who potentially are vaccinated, or we see some change in the virus itself, could these rules, could our advice change as to whether or not a mandate is appropriate?
Yeah. So, you know, I do think that this is a new question, right? It'll be really interesting to see over the next year or so what businesses do and kind of what the fallout is in terms of litigation. So I do think that, you know, right now we're kind of talking about this before all of that's happened. So I think hopefully as things become more clear in future years, it'll be an easier decision for employers to decide, you know, if they require it or if they don't. I think further kind of complicating the issue as well is the fact that the available vaccines right now aren't, they're still on an emergency use authorization status from the federal government. So that might assist as well once that goes through in terms of requiring a vaccine.
Emily, you mentioned concerted activity and the National Labor Relations Act. I mean, if your organization is unionized, can you suddenly just mandate that everyone be vaccinated, or would you have to make changes to your collective bargaining agreement based off of what that your CBA provides?
Yeah. So, you know, I would definitely want to take a look at the organization's collective bargaining agreement, but just off of its face, you know, I do think that you would have to negotiate it with a present union because it is a change in working conditions. It's probably not something that's written in your collective bargaining agreement. And if you are in a healthcare setting, it may be something that you have to further negotiate, even if your employees already have a provision that they are required to get the flu vaccine.
Even if you have a part of your organization's unionized and another part of your organization isn't, or the whole organization isn't unionized, do you still need to have, should you have concerns about a mandate and it potentially resulting in a unionized workforce, or discussions regarding unionization if you're changing past practices?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a fair concern. I think that this is just a really hot button issue right now. It's something new that people really haven't had to deal with at work, you know, aside from the healthcare industry. So I think that employers who are going to mandate it should just be cognizant that not all employees might be on board. And so what are the steps that you're going to take to kind of socialize that in your organization and make sure that you're not creating like an us versus them mentality and making sure that employees feel heard?
I think that those are really great points, Emily. And simultaneously, you could have part of your workforce that says, I only want to come back to work if everyone is vaccinated and I want you to mandate the vaccine. So you're going to have employees on, I think, both ends of the spectrum, and managing their expectations becomes a really big concern.
Yeah, no, certainly. And, you know, I think an interesting question as well is if you have a proportion of your employees who are organized and you're, you know, going through the negotiations process to talk through if they're going to be vaccinated, and then you have another proportion that isn't, what does that kind of look like? Are the rules different? Or, you know, you probably wouldn't want that in your organization just from a consistency standpoint, but it's a lot to think about, that's for sure.
Great point, Emily. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
It's grilling season, and you got the best beef brisket money can buy. Dry rubbed to perfection, slow smoked for 8 hours, and you dared to face that perfect smoky hickory wood flavor. With subpar wood cooking pellets? Uh-uh. Introducing Kingsford 100% hardwood pellets. No fillers or binders. Just 100% hardwood for 100% flavor. Learn more at kingsford.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Don't you love that feeling when you've just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, "Oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it?" That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you, so you can try on new styles in the comfort of your own home. Stitch Fix is on your terms and priced to fit your budget. There's no subscription required, ever. Keep what you want and send back anything you don't. So, isn't it time you started nailing your look? Get started today at StitchFix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for women, men, and kids. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Emily Waddell, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And we've spent today's episode talking about COVID-19 and return to work. Emily has provided us with really helpful information, I think, about what it looks like as we discuss returning employees to work, whether it's in a hybrid arrangement or whether it is full-time, jumping right back into 5 days a week in the office. We've talked about mandating vaccines and what we can and can't do and things we should be mindful of from a Americans with Disabilities Act perspective, from a religious accommodation standpoint under Title VII and other Fair Employment Practices legislation. One thing we haven't talked about, Emily, that I'd like to get your thoughts on is vaccine incentives. So employers who may not be mandating the vaccine, but who are incentivizing it. Are vaccine incentives legal?
Yes, so they are. But having said that, it's still pretty unclear what those can look like and what they can't look like. So it is an option if that's something that you're considering to incentivize your workforce. But having said that, you can't discriminate against folks who maybe can't get the vaccine because of a medical or a religious reason.
I think that's a really good point, Emily. So let's say I am an employer, I'm a company, and I've decided I'm going to incentivize people. My incentive can't be coercive. So I would presume, even though coercive is not defined, I can't buy new houses for all of my employees who are vaccinated. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
And if I have employees who can't be vaccinated because of a religious belief or because of a health condition, do I still need to provide them with the same incentive as my vaccinated employees?
Yes, so you would. Even if they aren't able to get the vaccine, to not offer them the same incentive could be construed as discriminatory. So they would be eligible to receive whatever your employees that do get vaccinated are eligible to receive.
Could I ask my employees for some type of proof that they can't be vaccinated? So either have a dialogue with them about what their religious belief is that would limit their ability to be vaccinated, or ask them for documentation from a doctor or healthcare provider concerning that health condition?
So you would be able to ask for that type of information to substantiate, you know, the reason why they're not getting vaccinated. That can kind of turn into a little bit of a slippery slope, depending on, you know, why you're asking and kind of how you're asking. So that's just something that employers want to be cognizant of if they are requesting that information.
That is a really good point, Emily. So making sure that we're mindful that if we are providing some type of incentive, that we're careful about how much information we receive so that we're not violating any type of health information statutes or getting information that may be protected under GINA or the ADA or other state health laws or rules. Emily, I have found today's presentation of information from you and this discussion to be extremely helpful, at least for me in understanding some of the things that we need to keep at top of mind when we're bringing employees back to work while we're still dealing with COVID. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Emily Combs from Verrill. Today, I want to talk a bit about employee handbooks. If you have an established business, you likely already have an employee handbook. If you are growing a business, an employee handbook is something you should consider for your organization. Handbooks can be helpful to establish expectations with your employees and answer common questions for your organization. Employee handbooks are important from a legal perspective because they may assist in an employer's legal defense if you ever face an employment lawsuit. Employee handbooks should be current and lawful, so it is important to keep up to date on changes to the law and make sure those changes are reflected in your handbook. Additionally, handbooks may need to be updated if a business expands into new states. Different states may have varying requirements when it comes to handbooks. For further conversation on employee handbooks, contact Verrill's Labor and Employment Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.